Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Sunday morning and welcome in with Pete Medhurst. I'm Grant Paulson. It is 9 a.m. and we are on the air live and local on 106.7 The Fan. We'll be with you till noon. At that time, Danny Ruye, Johnny Cakes Allville take over. They will host until 3 o'clock, so we're keeping it live, we're keeping it local, and keeping you guys hopefully entertained throughout the day with our normal weekday staff. Pete, how are you?
Just back from a walk with the dog, Grant, on a beautiful Sunday morning. I'm feeling great.
It's supposed to be really nice today, right?
Yeah, 71 and plenty of sunshine.
Love that.
This, in fact, I don't think we're going to have any rain until Thursday now.
Good. We've been getting too much of that as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big back patio cookout, maybe let the baby go in the baby pool, not have to come inside for an hour or two at a time kind of guy. So if I can pull that off today, and it sounds like I can, that's a win for me on a Sunday afternoon.
Make sure you cover the baby up because it's going to be an intense UV index day, and I'm sure my daughter will be doing the same. She will be out in our pool, I'm sure, probably within an hour. So it's a good day for it.
And she's old enough, you don't have to worry and like be with her every step of the way, I suppose. But, man, Danny and I were talking about this week. We got like the little plastic kiddie pool just that the baby can sit in or whatever. That is probably as good as you can do as far as having something that allows the baby to, you don't have to worry about anything for a little while. As far as kids under 3 years old, other than like a little baby pool, I'm not sure what you can do. Maybe, I don't know, maybe like a Puppy Dog Pals or a TV show, but there's not a lot in the way of keeping them occupied better than these little pools.
You know, it's the greatest, I will say this, pools, especially if your children show any kind of, liking to the water, pools can be the greatest babysitter of all time, so to speak. You can have, three or four kids' friends over, and, they'll sit out there and play for the longest time. Now, we, even at her age of 11 now, she'll be 12 next month, we still won't let her go in the pool if no one is here, even for 15 minutes, like if we go down the street to the in-laws to pick something up or whatever. But because our pool is like 6.5 feet deep, so you never know. You jump in the wrong way, you could have a problem. But, they will occupy tons of time. I mean, tons of time. You'll look up all of a sudden, it'll be like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You'll be like, where did the time go? And it's because they can just sit out there in the pool and relax, especially on a day like today, because today's not going to be like obsessively hot. You know, you get days even when it's obsessively hot sometimes. The pool can still even be, uncomfortable, but not on a day like today. It'll be great.
Pete, I did it yesterday. It happened. I got my hair cut.
How
first
about that?
Time since the quarantine and the pandemic started, I got my hair cut. So I was down in Fredericksburg. At a barber shop that's opened back up within the last couple of weeks. And I'll give them a lot of credit. So I had to wear a mask, obviously, being inside. They don't let you take the mask off at any point. So, like, when they're cutting your hair around your ears where the mask is, they kind of, like, fold the mask back, like, right on your sideburn. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of rules and policies, though. They're not allowed to touch the face in terms of, like, skin-to-skin with their fingers, so they're wearing gloves. They're not allowed to do anything with your facial hair, even in this barber shop that's known for, like, you know, the straight edge and getting tight and giving you the manicured beard. So they're not doing any facial hair. The mask stays on the entire time, as makes sense. I get it. They wear a mask while they're cutting your hair the entire time. And then after, like the guy before me was being cut, they spray the seat down with cleaner and kind of scrub it clean. You watch them do it. They put on new gloves. You sit down. I mean, you feel about as safe as you can in that process and that environment. Nobody's allowed in there other than the people that are having their hair cut in the barbers. There's no, like, waiting room. There's no section where you're just sitting and a bunch of people are walking in. It's all appointment only. So I felt about as good as about the process as I could have, and I walked out of there feeling like $1 million. I mean, it was the first time in forever where, you know, normally I don't like my hair that short, and I was like, you can go as short as you want, dude, because I don't know when the next time I'll be back in one of these seats is. Who knows? I mean, for all we know, you know, things could get shut back down or we could go in the other direction. So it was – I don't think I've been that happy to get a haircut and felt that good walking out of a barbershop in a long, long time.
You know, it's funny. My son came down for about the first month of this pandemic, my oldest one, and then we saw our youngest son and his girlfriend last week. Now, growing up, our youngest son had kind of the bowl cut type deal. Most part, you know, as he got older, he pretty much kept it tight. He was always a 1, 1.5, 2 at the most kind of guy. Well, when I saw him last week, he was almost unrecognizable. That's as much hair as he's ever had on his head his entire life. And the great news that his regular barber, the great Zach Unulu, was reopening this past week was great news for him. Great news for my father-in-law, finally was able to go get a haircut. Great thing for me, Grant. I kick back with the razor blade, and, you know, a couple times during the pandemic, I've probably gone 7 days, which was too much. But for the most part, every 3 days, I just give it a rip with the razor blade.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about it.
Give it a rip with the razor blade, do it on my own, and we're off and running.
It's funny, though, how much different you feel. I don't mean physically as much as, like, how much it helps your mental and your psyche to get that haircut. You know,
sure.
It's something that's been bothering you, but you take certain things for granted and just, I don't know if everyone's this way and you obviously won't relate to this as you don't go get a haircut, but that is the form of almost like pampering or, you know, whatever it would be kind of physically to your appearance, that vain part of you, whatever that, like, as a dude, I don't have many of these. Like, I'm not a pedicure, manicure guy. You know, I'm not going and getting facials or doing some of the, you know, things that my wife does necessarily with treatments and what have you. For me, a haircut is about as extreme as it gets, but you forget how much you just enjoy that process. Like sitting there in that chair, you know, chopping it up with a couple of dudes in the barbershop and having your hair cut, and then, you know, they're putting the, you know, all the good smell and powder and stuff all over you. You walk out of there feeling good. You forget just what that feels like. And, man, it had been so long. It was good to get it done.
No question. I remember, I mean, my last haircut came back in 2008 before the Mids went to Ball State. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to cut it all off. My wife finally signed off on it. She was the one who argued with me for a while not to do it. I'm like, look, this has got to go now. I mean, there's, you know, it doesn't
look
good.
So wait, in 2008 you said?
Yep.
So what were you when you're making that debate? Because that's got to be the hardest thing, right? The last time that you're letting your hair be your hair until you start shaving your head, because you've got to be at that point of no return because there's no going back. Then, I mean, was it like just combing over feathers? Like what did it look like?
No, I actually had more hair than that, but it wasn't great. In fact, I have a news article they did on me in 2006 when I was doing. Before I did my first game on CSTV, I'll tweet that picture out. That's kind of what it was. I was basically missing it all, and almost in the front. Then I had a little bit that you could still comb back over to the right. It didn't look awkward. It didn't look like any kind of a bad comb over. It was just I could tell where this was going. So at that point, I finally convinced the wife that it was a good thing to do, and she finally signed off on it because she had fought me on it, for a couple of years as I had started to speculate whether I should. And once I figured out, once the TV people said, yeah, that, we wouldn't have any problem with that, I was like, okay, let's do it. And that's eventually what we did. I'm going to tweet that out here at Pete Medhurst here in just a second.
Yeah, I want to see that pick. So I feel like some people are able to go bald and others just couldn't do it. Now, maybe it's as simple as I've always seen you as a bald guy, and I've never seen myself that way. But my thought would be your boy couldn't do the bald look. But, like, you have the type of head where it looks very reasonable. But is that as simple as I've seen it for so long I'm used to it? Or is there something to my theory that some people don't look right bald?
Grant, I think there are a couple things. A, you're probably used to it. B, I think people who do this and you see it the first time and you know whether you're comfortable with the shape of your head, with how it looks.
Right, exactly.
Or you let it grow back, you know, at least on the sides. You kind of do the Dick Vitale thing where he's kind of got the little wrap around the sides or something like that. But other than that, I mean, it comes down to a comfort situation. Either you feel like you look cool like that. I mean, here were the positives. Almost every person to a person thought I picked up at least 5 years in terms of how old I looked. I mean, I went from looking probably, I don't know, what was that, 2008, how much? I was 38 in 2008. A lot of people thought I was early 30s after I cut the hair. So from a visual standpoint, you pick that up. I also did the math, and when I did games on TV, I used Consort hairspray just to keep it in place and stuff like that, what little bit there was, and all the haircuts. I saved roughly $935 a year on hair care products. So you look better, you get the savings. What's not to like
about
either
thing? Where does that
math
come from, though? I mean, that seems like an outrageous amount of money to spend on hair.
Because
I'm just thinking in my own life with the hair that I have.
Mm-hmm.
If I how many I times get a
month,
haircut.
How many times a month do you get your hair cut?
Not once a month. I mean, I would say normally every 5 weeks or so. So let's just be generous and say I get 12 haircuts in a year. That's, I'm going to say right around 120, 240, maybe $300, something like that, 350 tops. So where's that other 600 coming from for you?
Well, see, I could not stand having hair on the back of my neck. If the hair on the back of my neck had even gotten remotely, what I would consider sloppy, I got my hair cut at least twice a month, easily twice a month, because that little things like that, looking neat, keeping it squared up in the back and clean, as I was taught by my grandfather who raised me when I was young. That's the way I always got my hair cut.
Constantly. Do you miss that at all? The process, like for me, you know, I think about
look,
not eating
here's
fast
what I miss.
Food anymore.
Here's what I miss, Grant. My barber shop in Churchton, the fabulous trims with Tim, and at the time, Rob, and Royal. We had some my wife and I literally at one point were ready to go to HBO and say, look, you have to do a TV show on this place. This place, as a barbershop, was as entertaining as the barbershop in Coming to America. Sometimes, and not necessarily the most political correct way, which would make you feel uncomfortable. At times, there were things that are there that made me feel uncomfortable by a particular barber and other people too, but you just knew he was rough around the edges, and you just kind of let him, okay, you kind of do your thing in your chair over there. But Tim was fabulous. He's the greatest diehard Redskin fan, so we were constantly talking, Redskins football throughout the course of every haircut, every time. Look, I would stop in there. I'd stop in the parking lot and just pop my head in just to say hello, just so we could BS about the Redskins and stuff during the course of football season. It was the prototypical local barbershop that
right.
people went to and had a hell of a time. You had a hell of a time every time you went in there. And more importantly, you got a great haircut for the most part.
Well, let's say like my neighbor was a barber and mm-hmm. would just come over to my house for free and cut my hair, all right, just hypothetically.
Right.
My point is, I would miss the process of
right.
going and getting
Absolutely.
My haircut. In the same way, now I miss fast food as much as anything else. You know, most of my life, you know, you go through the drive-thru, you get the food, you sit in the parking lot, you're listening to the radio. I can still kind of like think of myself at like I'm eating Wendy's and I'm listening to, I mean, even like shows that I don't care, like Freddie Coleman on ESPN Radio's voice randomly is in my head because it's like 10 p.m. and I'm listening to ESPN Radio or whatever. I missed the whole process of sitting in the parking lot. I'm not pulling away. I'm sitting here eating this. Like that part of the barbershop experience to me, I wouldn't want to just have my hair cut at home by my neighbor.
Let me ask you this. Do you think you don't think Bish misses the grooming lounge? I mean,
how many times
over the course of this pandemic has Jason mentioned, I can't wait for the grooming lounge to rip, but I can't wait for the grooming lounge to rip. You know, he wants that warm towel around his neck.
I see him every day. His hair is getting long, bro.
Yeah, he wants that pampered feeling and things of that nature. So, look, you're right. And by the way, I love Freddie Coleman, by the way. I know Freddie. He's a great guy. And those are voices like when I would come out of Rosecroft at night at the end of a weeknight of racing, Freddie would be on my radio.
Yep.
Exactly. But you're right. The process is something. Look, you don't think – look at how comfortable women are with their particular stylist. And when they can't get to that stylist, if that stylist, you know, goes on vacation, falls ill, whatever, and they can't get to that stylist, that's a huge mental block, I think.
It is.
For them.
You know,
they don't trust anybody else. Like, you know, I mean, I know most of the women out there that go see my girl Christine Innocente over in Northern Virginia. If they, for some reason, had to go to someone else, they would be in complete panic mode. That's the way people are about their hair, Grant, and about their appearance. Whether it's overkill or whatever, but if you are not comfortable with your appearance because you went to somebody else, they could give you a perfect haircut, Grant, and you know what? It's going to be like us on the radio over-evaluating a player in a particular sport. We're going to see something, and we're going to pick at it, nitpick at it. They could get a perfect haircut from another stylist. They're going to nitpick at it. It's just not right because Barbara didn't do it, you know?
And I never have, like, just rode with one person, like, where I go back all the time.
Or I always did.
Yeah. Which I should do, but you got to make appointments pretty much to do that. And I'm just a, hey, I want to get my haircut today guy. Like, I don't want to – well, next Friday at 3 o'clock, like, I'm just going to go in when I get in. So I'm driving by a Floyd 99, and I'm like, oh, there's a barbershop. I'll pull in, and I'll do it that way. Pete Medhurst, Grant Paulson, we are underway. And next we'll get into an anniversary. Yesterday, 2 years ago, one of the great moments in D.C. sports history, and I don't mean that lightly. We'll do that next right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
He's Pete. I'm Greg. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. It is May 31st in 2020, about 20 minutes after 9. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Yesterday was the 2-year anniversary of one of the big moments in D.C. sports history. 2018, the Caps win the Stanley Cup. People may forget that at one point in time, they were down 1-0 in that Stanley Cup after losing Game 1 in Las Vegas. And Game 2 was ongoing, and they were trying to protect a 3-2 lead in the third period. With about 2 minutes left in that game, up by 1 goal, desperately needing to salvage a split in Vegas to come back home, where they would eventually win 2 games and then go back and take Game 5 and rip off 4 in a row to win their first ever championship. The Golden Knights got a golden chance right in front of the crease. And Braden Holtby absolutely robbed an opportunity for Vegas to get even at that two-minute mark that would have sent the game potentially into overtime, and who knows what happens at that point. The save 2 years ago last night, as heard right here on 106.7 The Fan.
2 minutes to go, and a bucked up Dan Holtby watching a bad bounce out of the corner, and a shot and a save made by Braden Holtby. Oh, my! As Alex Tuck was robbed on a puck that came bouncing out of the corner, and Washington by a whisker still on top with 1:59 to go. My goodness, Braden Holtby.
Walton did what he could there to tell you is about the level of difficulty of that save, but there's just no way to do this particular save justice on the radio, I don't think, because as you've all seen now in the images and the murals and the paintings and the tattoos of this save, an awful bounce that, Pete, would have for years and years and years led to a goal against the Capitals that crippled them, ends up with the puck on Tuck's stick in shooting position, and he's got the entire net at his disposal with Holtby now immensely out of position. Holtby just kind of flailing, dramatically trying to get back in front of the cage, throws his stick out, covering what percentage of the net? You know, maybe, I don't know, a couple percentage points? And the puck hits his stick. He makes the save heard around D.C. and around the world. And I'll tell you about being in the arena and what was going on in a moment, but that was 2 years ago last night.
Grant, I will say this, and I've said this all along. Anybody that plays the position of goalie in hockey and lacrosse, A, you have to be a little bit crazy. B, you have to be unbelievably athletic and flexible, because some of the saves that are all reactionary, these are all reactionary things, Grant. There's no, oh, I'm going to stick out my leg on this one. I'm going to raise my glove up on this one. It is a reactionary position. That's the only way to play it, because the puck comes at you so fast. And I'll never forget it. I literally was airborne out of my seat because I couldn't believe what he had done. I mean, it's one of the greatest athletic feats from a goalie I've ever seen. I mean, it's a split second. You've got to go boom from one side to the other, and he got it. I couldn't believe he got the puck. And as a player, as a shooter, that's the most demoralizing thing that could ever happen, because you think, oh, I got a goal, this could be big, and then all of a sudden you don't have a goal, the light's not on, and everybody is, you know, looking at Braden Holtby like Superman at that point. Simply one of the greatest athletic feats I've ever seen, regardless of sport. And obviously, at the moment, you could argue one of the top two, top three, certainly, moments in Washington Capitals history overall. I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing play by Braden Holtby.
So you heard John Walton's call on the Caps radio network here on The Fan. This was the telecast with Doc Emrick discussing Braden Holtby's heroics.
The edge of the crease, and now the hash marks as it's dealt back in, and set a cross. Oh, and it didn't go! It was Tuck with a wide open net!
Incredible stop by Braden Holtby. It's an adventure right there. Now watch this. The puck goes across. Tuck has a wide open net, and the paddle of the stick, Holtby.
That's Doc Emrick in the second voice you hear, Eddie O. But, man, I just think back to that moment and where I was, Pete. I was sitting in the upper levels. So for those two cup games, I was in the arena. And my wife came out to Vegas with me. That time we didn't have a kid. And we enjoyed kind of the 3 or 4 days in Vegas. But we went to games 1 and 2. And I bought tickets for the upper bowl at T-Mobile Arena for those games for us. Obviously, he had the credential, but she wanted to go, and I wasn't going to let her go alone. So the two of us got tickets. And at the time, I remember we were debating, like, do we want to just watch outside or watch in a bar? It's so expensive. And it was by far the most I'd ever spent on seats. So we don't have a ton of money to go around. But I said, you know what? When's the next time the Caps are going to be in the Cup? And we paid right around $900 a seat for those two games each, you know, four times over, I guess, mm-hmm. for the two games. And what's funny, because someone was asking me for the World Series similarly, should I do this? Should I go? Should I get these tickets to see the Nats? It's going to cost me close to $1,000. And I said, all I could tell you is this. You know, I can't get in your pockets. I can't tell you what you got money-wise or not. I know that it was something that financially didn't make a ton of sense for us to do at that time, but I have never for one second, not one second since those two games, thought about how much I paid for those seats. Not one second. And I mean that. I could have paid $10 or $900-some. I've never regretted it. I've never said, damn, I spent a lot of money on those seats. I've thought about the stories of that night a million times. I've thought about how much fun we had, even in the game that they lost a million times over. But I've never thought about how much money we spent. But we're sitting up in the 400s. We're surrounded by Golden Knight fans. I mean, kudos to them. And they were nice. They were pleasant. They were awesome the entire time. We were completely surrounded. Sea of black and their gold or whatever they are. And we're wearing our red cap sweaters. And that shot from Tuck after the bounce comes and the puck's on his stick resulted in kind of all at once the arena losing its mind. So everyone kind of jumps like you did out of their seats because the game is now tied and we all know it. To the point where I was in, like, let's say five rows up in the 400s or something. So people are now standing up so I can't even see the net. And I'm kind of hanging my head, and me and Allison are like, oh, here we go again, kind of looking at each other like, and you're starting, you know, we had a few seconds of everyone celebrating and high-fiving and kind of taunting and joking around us like, okay, overtime, overtime, to the point where we're now thinking, all right, we're going to need a heroic goal. Like, that's the only way to get out of here 1-1. And for 2 or 3 seconds, and I'm not exaggerating, like, everyone in the arena had still kind of was acting. They weren't staring at the net to see the celebration. They were, like, hugging and high-fiving. And so I would say for about 2 or 3 seconds, we thought it was a game-tying goal. And then as people started to, like, look or sit down, you could kind of hear people be like, he stopped it. Like, they didn't score. No goal, no goal. And people are wondering, did they take the goal away? Like, he didn't. What happened? Because they, where we're sitting, you can't imagine they actually made the save. But there were seconds, Pete, where I thought that game was tied. And then they all have to sit down, depressed and devastated. And I got to stand up and scream like Michael Phelps on the side of the pool, primal scream that Holtby had made the save and we get to chant Holtby. It was so great. I mean, being there for that moment, that's probably like the moment from those two games that I will remember the most just as a fan in that arena, more so than anything else.
I don't think there's any question. We've all seen, especially in hockey, Grant, because of your, at times, inability to actually see where the puck is. You just assume player completes the play, shoots the puck, and it goes in the net. We've seen people jump out of their seats only to react like, you know, oh, my God, he missed the net, or in this case, the goalie made the stop. But, I mean, Doc Emrick basically expressed, and this is why Doc is so unbelievably good, he expressed exactly what the Vegas Golden Knights fans were feeling at that point when he went, oh, it didn't go! You know, that's exactly what they were feeling. They're like, oh, my God, it didn't go in. And that's what makes Doc as good a play-by-play man, regardless of sport, that we've ever had in the history of the industry. He's just so good at hockey, and he delivered exactly what you're talking about. He delivered exactly what the Vegas Golden Knights fans were feeling at that point. And you going right along with them had a chance to, after about a second and a half, 2 seconds, go exhale and go, oh, my God, he did make the save. So as John Walton was kind of indicating from a Capitals perspective. So it's the emotions of sports fans. We see it all the time. And obviously you and I are a little bit spoiled because we sit in the press box more often than not and watch games. But you to see that split-second emotion change literally – in the blink of an eye, from one way, from exultation to depression, the agony of defeat, as the great Jim McKay used to say on Wide World of Sports. If it's for your team, if the moment goes for your team, it's a great thing to be a part of. If it goes against your team, you're simply astonished for the next hour after the game, walking around going, I can't believe the puck didn't go in. I mean, Vegas fans, Vegas players are probably saying that for 12 to 36 hours, Grant, how they couldn't believe that puck didn't go in the net.
Yeah, I bet you Tuck still kicks himself. I mean, you score that goal, you're up 2-0. You didn't win another game in that cup, as it were. but you're coming back here with a 2-0 advantage. I mean, think about the percentage chance of a series swinging on 1-1 as opposed to 2-0. And look, it was as much luck as anything else. I mean, it was an amazing athletic accomplishment and feat, as you said, for Braden Holtby. But he positions that puck 2 inches lower, 2 inches higher. It's probably ricocheting off the stick and into the back of the net.
Look, I mean, it's just like Joe Theismann knocking the ball away from Kimbo Camper in Super Bowl 17. It's like the Jeter play against the A's in the World Series. I mean, all of those plays have an element of luck and good fortune to them.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you don't.
And that luck eluded them for so long. It was finally their year to do it. What do you guys remember about where you were or your recollections of the save about 2 years ago this weekend? 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to join us.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Pete and Grant on 106.7 The Fan. Braden Holtby making the save. Heard round the sports world 2 years ago yesterday. Without that save, the Caps probably don't win the Stanley Cup. And they're down 2-0 coming home instead of split 1-1. Of course, the next time they were back in Vegas, they were up 3-1. And trying to finish off the Knights in Game 5, and they did that. Here's a question. Vic brought this up. Eller's goal that won the Stanley Cup in Game 5, you know, may go down as the most influential or important moment in Caps history because that's when they took the late Game 5 lead in the third period. I think you got to throw Kuznetsov's goal that beat Pittsburgh in Round 2, the round that they couldn't get past, into the mix. You know, if they were beating the Rangers even, who was a rival in the Metro, or the Flyers, it would have been big. But the fact that it was Pittsburgh and you killed off the bad boss at the end of the big level, you know, the episode that, you know, was the end of this series for so many years and finally you punched through it and you got a new season. Greenlit, that's got to be in the conversation. The save is right there, though. You want to talk about the biggest moments in Caps history. Maybe the Joe Juneau goal as far as moments before this Rock the Red era. Where would you put the save, Pete, in that pantheon?
Yeah, as I said last segment, I would say because of when it occurred and what it represented, it's got to be up there in the top three moments of all time because, as you mentioned, that puck goes in and you go down 2-0 eventually in that series. The complexion of that series is completely different. I know everybody said, well, the Capitals went on to win, you know, four games, but momentum means so much, and Vegas plays with a completely different confidence level if you don't rip their heart out with that save the way it was. I think, obviously, the Kuznetsov goal, because of who it represented you beating and getting past those dastardly Penguins in an important spot. You know, I'm not talking about beating the Penguins in a regular season game or even in the first round. But a little bit deeper in the playoffs. I'm talking about what it represented to finally exercise that demon and get by Pittsburgh in a very important spot in the playoffs. Not only for the team, but more specifically, you know, so we could stop at least for 1 year having the Alexander Ovechkin-Sidney Crosby debate in the playoffs. The one goal that many Caps fans will remember, and at the time obviously it was huge, would be the Dale Hunter goal against the Philadelphia Flyers at overtime because it exercised being Ron Hextall, who, you know, was just a guy that dominated many people, more importantly, the Capitals. So other than that, I mean, it was the save's got to be right up there. Has to be right up there with anybody, with anybody in Capitals history. Vic brought up another one too, Esa-Tikkanen's goal. You know, when he was with the Capitals in the playoffs. I mean, there's a couple that stand out, but certainly because of what they represented, you could discuss Kuznetsov, Eller, Holtby in the top three plays of Capitals history. There's no question about it.
Oh, you absolutely could. I think that, you know, if we did some digging and you bring up some important milestones and markers through the years, there's other eras that will be well represented in that list. But the importance of a championship, finally, and what it meant to the city, breaking the drought, as you saw with the parade celebration and the tens of thousands of people on 7th and F streets, the idea that a lot of people had just decided they were never going to win a cup. You know, I kind of always held out hope, but I had prepared myself every year for the possibility, and I kind of justified it in my own head as saying, this isn't another sport where the best team is going to win, where you kind of control the outcome. It's as much as anything else about bounces and puck luck and breaks, and it's fluky. So you're either going to get it or you're not, and there's only so much you could do about it, which is kind of true. But obviously you have more control over it maybe than that makes it sound. But I think a lot of us, particularly in my generation, who had been at this thing every single year, because it's hard to be as good as they were for as long as they were and not even make a conference final. I mean, you throw some type of like Paul Basir algorithm where you do 10,000 seasons into a machine. You don't spit out a result where the Caps don't get to a single cup final with that group for that long, that many bites at the apple, that many President's Trophy caliber teams. It just doesn't happen. So I think a lot of people just kind of talk themselves into the possibility, Pete, that they wouldn't see it. And that's why I think some of the moments from the cup run just have to move to the front of the pack. Also, you've changed the sport in this city forever now. I mean, the amount of Caps fans that you see, the flags outside of homes and neighborhoods, or you know, the decals on the back of cars or license plate holders or whatever. You know, as you said, you go back years and years ago, like you do, to the expansion team. I mean, they're trying to save this team. Even, you know, right before Ovechkin, they'd been to a cup. You know, they'd blown it up with Ted Leonsis, but the Caps, they weren't a thing. They weren't the fun thing to do in town. So I think it's just changed forever based on that run, which is I move a lot of the moments from that 2018 postseason to the front, and everything else kind of will come after.
It was basically what it had become. And obviously, you know, I live 20 minutes from the Capitol Center, so I was able to go to a lot of games. One of my math teachers in middle school, Miss Beck, was a season ticket holder, and she would get me to a couple of games per season. But at that point, Grant, it was very much, because of the popularity of the Redskins, it was very much a niche fan base who basically wanted to go to, I think it was Fawnsworth after the game, and hang out with smoking Al Kokin and all those folks over there. You know, Rod Langway. When that group came in, they made a great trade with the Canadiens, you know, giving away a great, what we thought, a young prospect that time in Ryan Walter, and getting, you know, Rod Langway and Dougie Jarvis and those guys, Craig Lachlan, back in return. That's when hockey really started to finally get consistently good here, but it was still very much a niche sport. Grant, 2 years ago, we finally had turned the corner in some cases where it became okay to talk about something other than the Redskins, because the Capitals had just built up so much of this cachet and right. Then cashed in their chips by winning the Stanley Cup.
Well, and the casual fan got in. You know, it was
right.
No
look at,
longer
I mean, obviously,
just
look
what
at the streets
all
of D.C.
Caps fans did.
You mentioned
exactly.
you were in Vegas. Look at the streets of D.C. the night of the Stanley Cup clinching game. In
yeah,
fact,
I was
all
home
through
for
the
that.
Playoffs.
I was at the arena for the watch party.
Yes,
in game
so, I mean,
five.
look at what had become. People would like to argue that it's the 18,000, 20,000 that come to. Come down to Chinatown and that's it. Well, it's become much more than that. It's become much more than that. Capitals hockey has become a hip thing. They sell out every night. And you know, obviously, I go back to an owner in Ted Leonsis making a commitment. We didn't have any of this Bryce Harper drama with the Capitals because Ted realized what he had, made the 13-year commitment to Alexander Ovechkin, who has delivered for his owner as a result of that commitment. I'm a guy, I don't like long-term deals like that, because if a guy gets hurt and he doesn't play for you eventually during some of that time, it becomes, you know, wasted money, especially in a sport that has salary cap ramifications. But because he took the risk to commit to his best player, to a all-time type talent, it paid off here in town, making the Capitals not only hip, but you can argue now, Grant, at least right now, that the Capitals, Nationals, Redskins share discussion of the sports pantheon in Washington. And up until a few years ago, that wasn't something that we could always say.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, the fan bases are larger for those other two teams, but you're talking about the passion and what you saw during that cup run when, you know, you filled an arena to watch a game that wasn't being played in that arena on TV. And then you had thousands of people outside who couldn't get in standing there to watch on more TVs. It was incredible. We've seen those scenes, you know, all these places all over the world, you know, Toronto and whatnot, you know, these parks filled with people watching championship games for years. And it was our city's time, which was neat. Brandon Brown's going to be on the show at the top of the hour. He races in the Xfinity Series. They are in Bristol this weekend. So, in fact, the big boys race today at Bristol, and then he and his crew race tomorrow as they push that race back. But he's a guy that Pete knows. He's from Woodbridge. NASCAR Paulson has gotten into racing, so I've got some questions of my own getting into the sport. That could be fun coming up in about 15 minutes. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Chad Dukes, Danny Ruhier today at noon. I said earlier, cakes and Danny. I am a creature of habit, Pete. They've been together on the weekends for the last several weeks. But cakes, I guess, was on yesterday. Chad is on with Danny today. So 12 to 3 after us. Those guys will keep you company. So make sure you're listening at that time. Welcome back, 106.7 The Fan. Pete Medhurst and Grant Paulson. We've been talking about The Save by Braden Holtby, which was 2 years ago. Crazy to think that the Caps Cup, now the Nationals World Series, all in a short time, changing the city the way that it has. Top of the hour, Brandon Brown is on, who is a driver in the Xfinity Series. I've gotten into racing a little bit. I thought it'd be fun, by the way, Pete. We could do this later in the show, maybe in the final hour. But if you gave me a little NASCAR quiz on some terms or, I don't know, some fun questions to
see what you've learned so far during the course of this season.
Exactly, to see where I'm at. I've watched kind of every lap of
now,
four races
say,
now.
I was going to say, full disclosure, I got to tell you, Grant has texted me during every race so far, and just like a true sports analyst, he has, when things aren't right during the course of a race for his driver, he texts me right away. That was a terrible pit stop. What did they do that for? So you are falling right in line with other NASCAR fans and analysts, exactly how to watch a race and
there
follow your guy.
Well, I got questions for Brandon, just general racing stuff, so we could discuss those with him coming up at the top of the hour, and I'll get my quiz as well from Pete at the end of the show before we get out of here at the end of the day. By the way, Burger Day was this week. I don't know if you know this, but like, I don't know when this started. Was this a thing like 15 years ago where like every day was a day? So like National Cheeseburger Day was the middle of this week. I don't know if I've just started noticing this more in the last couple years, but it's like one day's donut day. The next day is eat a salad day. The next day is hold a baseball day. Like everything's a day. Is that always been a thing?
I think what has happened, Grant, because of social media now, if one person says, because remember a couple, I think it was a year ago or so, we had people say it was Taco Day like twice within the same month, and everybody just kind of ran with it on social media. Like if somebody popular, has got a lot of followers, goes on social media and says, today is French Fry Day, all of a sudden you'll get a full day of people talking about French fries, eating French fries, sharing pictures of French fries all throughout. So you have a lot of followers. If you went on and said, you know, today is cheeseburger day, you know, show us pictures of your favorite cheeseburger, you'd get thousands of pictures of cheeseburgers by the end of the day.
I mean, it's funny you say that, because that's kind of one of the things I always think is, I feel like there was a National Cheeseburger Day like 3 weeks ago. Like, if it's a thing, then it should happen annually, right? Like once a year. And I feel like every few weeks it's the same day that we already just had. But it seems like people just want an excuse to do something.
Well, people can't keep up with the calendar. People haven't been able to keep up with the calendar during this pandemic, Grant. So if you look at a calendar and it says National Cheeseburger Day, you may have thought it was, you know, May 13th. It was actually like May 17th or something like
that.
So, you know, I mean, it's not impossible to blow this thing. I mean, how many things do you think the people at Hallmark, the creative people at Hallmark, just imagine if we had had social media, God knows, 25 years ago, what the people at Hallmark would have been doing just to get people to buy more cards and stuff like that. You know, today could have been Cousins Day, and we could have had, you know, all the different little things that you can celebrate. You know, today is Stanley Cup World Championship Day. Buy a Stanley Cup card for your favorite fan or something like that. I mean, what the people at Hallmark have done through the years just to get people to buy cards, I mean, there's a celebration for everything now. I mean, it's a celebration
sure
for everything.
But you think about, like, college, though, and people are just looking for an excuse to throw a party. So, like, okay, you're looking at your roommate. You're like, when's your birthday? And someone's like, ah, it's, you know, let's say it's June 10th. And you're like, well, mine's in March. And someone's like, yeah, mine's in May. And like, oh, mine's in September. Like, all right, what about half birthdays? And like, you're just looking for, like, we'll have a party this weekend. We need a reason to do it. And then we decide, did you get a new job? No, but I'm thinking about applying. It's like, okay, we'll do a party because Tom's thinking about applying to a job. So we'll have a bunch of people over to drink, and you just want the excuse to party. And I think this is kind of like that deal where people, like, really want to eat a burger that day. We can't just eat burgers. We need now – it needs to be National Burger Day. But that said, I'm not going to complain about things that I like, and I love burgers. So yesterday – or
do you still eat them?
Yeah. I mean, you got to eat them differently. It depends. I mean, you can have a burger every now and then the way that you want it. But generally, if I'm going hard in the paint with my program, it's got to be on lettuce. You know, I could do cheese in the meat if I'm grilling it on my own. Do it either without a bun. I mean, the bun is really the killer. Right. The meat and the cheese aren't the problem.
Can I ask you a question? Because I don't like lettuce on my cheeseburger. Here's why.
Never put lettuce on a burger.
How can you? Well, you just said you eat it on lettuce.
But well, I mean, lettuce bun. I'm saying I've never, like, as a condiment.
Oh,
or
right. Okay.
On a
right. I was going to say because burger. You know, there's nothing worse than warm lettuce. So a hot, juicy cheeseburger with a warm on lettuce, it's just that I was going
to
say.
No, so in that situation, Pete, what they do, you go to whether it's a Five Guys or a restaurant or whatever, and you be the annoying guy who asks for the lettuce bun. But it's the hot burger on, you know, the bottom of the bun can get, the lettuce bun can get kind of warm. But it's a big, cold kind of block of lettuce, so it's not as bad, particularly the top level. But, yeah, I've never been a lettuce on a burger guy at all. For me, it's very simple. So, like, if I'm ordering at Five Guys, which is my favorite burger, I'm going bacon. I'll never order a burger from a restaurant, takeout or something that doesn't have bacon. So I'm going bacon, cheese, ketchup, mustard, and pickle. Five things, always same five things. Now, if I want to get creative or if anything is different, it's because I don't like the type of pickles that they use and I'll get rid of it. So it's bacon, cheese, ketchup, mustard. But I don't add anything else. There is nothing I'm missing. Like, that is my perfect burger. And if it's cooked properly, you don't need a million things on a burger. Do I like onions? Would I be furious if you put onions on my burger? No. I like mushrooms fine. Do I need mushrooms on my burger? Hell no. I want ketchup, mustard, bacon, and maybe some pickles. That's the list.
See, when I go to McDonald's, usually I get the cheeseburger, ketchup only, or plain. A lot of times I'll go plain. And when they put, and I know how the grill orders are made when people order stuff like that, and when people just disregard my order and put the grill onions and stuff on there, it makes me almost as Eric Bickle in the morning on the Junkies, because I specifically asked for no onions and they just disregarded my grill order, just disregarded it. You know, I'm just not a I'm just not an onion person. But, you know, I'm with you. I mean, I do ketchup. I can do mustard. I can do cheese. That pretty much keeps it simple for me. And I don't need a whole lot of other stuff on my burger. In fact, if it's seasoned correctly, especially if the McDonald's Quarter Pounder is seasoned correctly and they cook it properly, I can eat it plain. And the seasoning that they are supposed to put on the burger really gives it a nice little bite of taste to it. And I could eat it without any condiment on there at that point. So,
I'll eat a cheeseburger however you present it. In terms of, you know, no condiments, whatever. That I told you what I would prefer. But when I'm grilling burgers, I like to take, you know, uncover the patties, leave them out for like 20 minutes with salt and pepper on them or something like that. That's about it. A little salt, a little pepper.
Do you use a George Foreman grill since you're a health guy?
I have not in a long, long time, no. I mean, I cook stuff on the grill and just do it that way. When I was single and on my own, I used a Foreman grill all the time in the house. But, I haven't seen one of those probably now in 6 years.
I use mine at least once a week. It's the most fabulous. Nice. It's the most fabulous thing ever created. I even got an autograph from George Foreman, but I think it's the most fabulous thing ever created because I don't like all the grease and the sloppiness, even though
Idea of the Foreman in terms of health is just that because it's on that incline that the grease slides into the dish, right? So you feel
correct.
Better about it because there's less grease on it.
That's correct, sir. Taste and tastes good too.
Yeah, it tastes like you're grilling something, which is good. Yeah, I got no problem with the Foreman. I just used to be right on the counter in my apartment, and ever since I moved to my house, I don't even know if it made the move. I haven't used it. Ever since I got a real grill, I don't think I've thrown anything on a Foreman. He's Pete. I'm Grant. Let's talk a little racing next with a guy who's going to be trying to tame the track at Bristol. It's going to be fun. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.